Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Seth Meganson, and we're talking here on a Friday afternoon as well. There's already conference tournament play underway in some quarters across the country. We're getting ready for the final weekend of the regular season and the ACC, among other conferences. Looking forward to, for my sake, the ACC tournament next week. And we're going to talk with Seth. He's our bracketologist here at AFP. We're going to talk with Seth about his latest look at the NCAA tournament field, potential NCAA tournament field. And Seth, thanks for joining us. And let's start with your top seeds. Let's see. Anything different? Kansas, Baylor, Gonzaga, San Diego State. I think things are holding pretty clear there.
Yep, everything's the same as it was earlier in the week. Like we talked about, though, on Monday, if there is going to be any movement, it will be this, like what San Diego State does in their Mountain West tournament, because that spot, I think, now is just between them and Dayton. So we'll see in the next week how that plays out.
And so looking now, that's the first place people always want to look is at the top seeds. Maybe more so this year than even in past years. I mean, there's always interest in the cut line, the last few teams in, the first few teams out. And some movement for you this week. Your last four in now, Wichita State, Stanford, Richmond, Utah State. Your first four out, Cincinnati, Arizona State, UCLA, NC State. Where do you want to start there as far as the movement back and forth among that group?
Well, this year, the bubble has been harder for me to predict, I feel like, than years past. It has been just back and forth, and it's very interesting. It's going to all depend on really how the committee sees it. I was going to say, I went ahead and put the teams like Richmond, Wichita State, Utah State in, because though their strength of schedules aren't as good as some of the other teams that are on the bubbles, they don't have as many losses. And at the end of the day, losses have to count for something. But yeah, this week, I know we talked about Richmond a little bit on Monday. Rhode Island, I had them in, and now they're not even in my first four out. They were destroyed by Dayton the other day, which you would think there's no shame in losing to Dayton, but that really hurt Rhode Island, but it also really benefited Richmond. Richmond's got a chance in the A-10 tournament coming up next week to maybe solidify their spot into the field. NC State, we talked about, lost to Duke. It did hurt them more than maybe I expected, even though, I mean, a loss at Duke isn't anything to be ashamed about, but that dropped them out. I think they're going to have a good showing in the ACC tournament to fight their way back in. But, yeah, it's really just going to depend on how the committee sees it, if they value win-losses or if they value, like, your strength of schedule, because some of these teams, their strength of schedule isn't very strong, but when they have played teams, they've performed pretty well. But then you have other teams on there who have stronger strength of schedules, but maybe against the top flight teams, they've been losing. So it's going to be interesting to see how the committee decides to pan that out.
You know, one thing I'm noticing too, you unlike a lot of folks, I'm hearing a lot of love. In fact, I just finished a run, listened to the a podcast, and Pat Forty was talking about his thoughts on various things. And one question that was posed to him on this podcast related to the Pac-12. A lot of love from a lot of folks for the Pac-12 this year. You're not among that group. I see among your teams out, including Arizona State, UCLA. You know, I'm probably more in line with you actually than most folks as regards the Pac-12. But give me your thought process on leaving a couple teams out there, including UCLA, who's right now tied for first in that conference.
Yeah, so UCLA, I actually had them in the earlier one this week because they actually had a half a game lead on Oregon. So I always put the team that's in first in.
Okay.
So if UCLA wouldn't have been a half game ahead going into the week, I wouldn't have probably had them in, but since they were, I decided to put them in. But no, I mean, UCLA is playing really good basketball right now. They really are. And honestly, if they get put in, I don't have anything against that whatsoever. But when you look at the full body of work, their BPI and bet number isn't really terribly high. They have 12 losses. Yes, they're playing their best basketball at the right time. But, you know, do you reward a team who, honestly, at the beginning of the season, did not look good at all? And as you say, so, I mean, like, are you going to take the whole body of work in, or are you just going to go with what you're seeing now? I mean, at the end of the day, I get a feeling that UCLA is going to probably get in, and if not, it's probably going to be, like, the first team left out. But as of right now for me, just with how the numbers line up, I don't think that they should be in right now. And I think a lot of the Pac-12 team numbers kind of inflate from playing each other when I don't necessarily know how good the Pac-12 is. I mean, look at a team like Colorado that I have right now in as an 8 seed. I think they've lost, is it 4 or 5 straight? They're playing terrible basketball right now, so those wins aren't looking as good as what they used to. Arizona has a high net, high BPI, but they have 10 losses. So, yeah, it's just, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's almost like you just keep going around in circles with the Pac-12 teams. Like, there's some times where I'm like, yeah, okay, I can see where people, like you were talking about, like the Pac-12 this year. And there's other times where I'm like, it's still the same old Pac-12. It just looks a little bit nicer. Like, I think maybe the Pac-12 has been so low the past couple of years that now any sense of improvement, everybody's, you know, wanting to jump all over that. When really, I don't think it's that much of an improvement in that conference, to be honest, overall.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you there. And it's such a philosophical quandary that we're, when we're talking about this resume and sort of teams like this. All right, so, you know, on the one hand, you want to value recent success. You know, we look at the record in the last 10 games of teams when we get to the Selection Sunday. So that's important. But then if you say the record in the last 10 games has you know, a big factor, then what are you saying? Then November, December don't matter, right? I mean, because if you're valuing the last 10, then you're, you know, hey, but they played terrible. They were 8-9 at one point this season. They lost to Hofstra, who's, you know, a plus 100 team. They lost to Notre Dame, North Carolina. Notre Dame is not an NCAA tournament team right now. North Carolina's last place in the ACC. They lost at home to Cal State Fullerton. Cal State Fullerton's a 268 team in Ken Pom right now, at least. I've got that metric up right now. And so are you saying we don't value November, December? And then you hear, oh, no, actually we do value November, December because we value supposedly non-conference strength of schedule. So it's kind of talking out of lots of sides of your mouth when you say, well, okay, this is valued. This is, if everything's valued, what do you value? So I think I see your point there, and that can really apply to a lot of teams' resumes.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, there's a ton of teams that, you know, like UCLA, got off to a slow start and now playing really good basketball that you might think, okay, you know, are they going to get in? Texas is for one. Texas, I have them in now. I mean, but their numbers, though, line up pretty well. They were a team that wasn't playing very good early on. Now it's playing very good when they're in, but they also have the benefit of better numbers than UCLA, like in the BPI and the net strength of schedule. Okay, and then you have some teams, like I mentioned Colorado, who played really good at the beginning of the year and now are stinking up the court, but their BPI net numbers are still good, so you're like, what do we do with them? So, yeah, it's just back and forth. It's kind of hard to figure out, and those are the teams that are the hardest for me to figure out and predict. Those and maybe the smaller conference schools that are doing well, because you're just like, what are they going to value? Are they going to value what they've done recently, or are they going to look at everything as a whole?
So I think we started talking a little bit about NC State. I was going to look at the ACC teams. I'm in agreement with you. When I do columns, I just look at just the ACC schools, and I've been updating one of the ACC bubble teams for the last couple of weeks and going in depth on their numbers. NC State, their average rating in the six metrics, the net, the KenPom, KPI, Sagarin, BPI, and strength of record, is 54.7, and that's up 4.2 points since Monday. They lost to Duke. If they were a Big Ten team losing at home to a 13-16 team, they probably would have gone up. But that being what it is, they're 8-9 against Quadrant 1, Quadrant 2. If you're in the 50s in these rankings, in these numbers, it's hard to feel good. Do you have a cutoff there? I mean, is it something that you look for there? I know there's so much subjectivity even with metrics, but where do you think folks should feel comfortable when they look at their numbers?
Well, to be honest with you, when it gets down to like the bubble teams, like the strictly, like you don't know what's going to happen with them, I kind of do throw those numbers kind of out a little bit. I kind of start looking at more quality wins and, like, you know, I still put them in mind, like, okay, this is what their net is and stuff like that. But really, I look at, like, who have you beaten and then also strength of schedule. I honestly, we talked about it on Monday, I think strength of schedule goes a long way for most committees when they do it. I mean, we talked about like how 30 years Tech didn't get in and everything like that when people thought they probably should have. I mean, it always came down to strength of schedule. So, yeah, I would probably say when it gets down to like the bubble teams, yes, you got the Nets and the BPI ranking and the KenPom, like maybe they're in the 50s or 60s, and those are important. But really, overall, I think when I really look at the bubble teams, I'm thinking about like your record overall and then your strength of schedule. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I differentiate them. But like I said, you just never know with how this committee, since it changes every year, what they're going to look at and what they're going to value. But yeah, I'd say when I get closer to the bubble teams, I kind of throw a lot out the window, to be completely honest with you, and just kind of go on strength of schedule and win-loss.
So now here's a tangent, but something as we're talking about this, something just pops in my head. I do regular podcasts with Jerry Carter, and he's been harping on this ever since the start of the season, really. This being the first year the ACC's had a 20-game conference schedule, and his thought early, and he's repeated it a couple times to me, and I've never bought into it. I've never agreed with him on this, but his thought was, well, playing those 20 conference games might hurt the ACC because you're playing the 20 conference games, you're beating each other up more. My thought was, no, come on, that's replacing two non-conference games with two conference games. That should be good for your strength of schedule. I wonder, though, we're seeing this first year of an ACC schedule with 20 games where the non-conference strength of schedule up and down the league, for the most part, is not as good as it was in past years. I'll kind of bring this up real quick to see if it makes any sense, what I think it makes any sense. Kind of hard to do. I was trying to cheat with Ken Palms, when you go to the ACC, it doesn't quite give you the non-conference strength of schedule. Dukes is pretty good. Actually, I say Dukes is pretty good. Their non-strength of schedule, according to Ken Palms, 88. Louisville, 209. I got to scan real quick. Florida State's got to be in there at the top. Yeah, they're 135. So you see that. So it makes me wonder if maybe the ACC schools, non-conference strength of schedule, maybe they scheduled themselves a little lighter because they were afraid of the 20-game schedule. And that non-conference strength of schedule is killing them. And this year, I'm kind of thinking out loud here, but do you think there's anything to that? And the fact that then carries over into your conference strength of schedule because, you know, that just kind of repeats itself through the season. Whereas conferences that are more mature, I think the Big Ten's used a 20-game schedule for a little while now, and so maybe they're used to scheduling that way, and maybe that's a factor why our numbers are down this year in the ACC. I say us because I'm an ACC guy. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's a very interesting theory and the way to look at it. I do think with how the teams are this year in the ACC, it's really affected it because, let's face it, this is regardless of if it was 18 or 16 games, this is a down year for the ACC. But no, the whole standpoint of, well, yeah, we have two more conference games, so we schedule lighter in the out-of-conference, there probably is, you know, that's probably how some teams thought, and that could have affected strength of schedule. So I can definitely see that. I'd like to see it, though, more of a year when the ACC is up, like to see like how it looks after that, because yeah, I was gonna say, like I said, I think it was a mixture of, yeah, maybe they weakened their out of conference schedules a little bit more since they had two more conference games, but also the ACC was not nearly as strong as it has been in like the past decade plus. So yeah, I would probably say that this year is probably not a good outlier to really test that theory, just because of how poor the quality I feel like has been in the bottom half of the ACC. But it is something to look to and think in the future, be like, yeah, let's see if this continues to affect teams, how they like their strength of schedule, record, their, you know, ratings, all that stuff like that, how they schedule teams in the out of conference. So I mean, I definitely do think that it's something to keep an eye on, but I don't know if I would right now commit to saying, oh yeah, that's what's been bringing things down, and you know, so on and so on.
Yeah, there's something to that. There's I was just counting numbers up for the Big Ten and the ACC. There's 10 Big Ten teams with 9 losses or records with at least 9 losses that are considered tournament quality. 19-9 Indiana, you know, teams like that. In fact, there's not really a dominant Big Ten team, if you ask me. I think their league leader has 7 losses overall, whereas the ACC's only got six teams with at least an 18-12 record. Syracuse at 17-13. I would argue some years a 17-13 ACC team is on the bubble. This year, Syracuse probably not anywhere close to a bubble. They could, you know, but in past years, Syracuse teams at 17-13 have ended up going to a Final Four. That 2016 team barely made the tournament, got to a Final Four. So, four good teams, three other teams that are fringe. Yeah, this is probably not a year to make that argument. But I also think there's a lot of ACC teams beating each other up kind of things going on here, too. So what do we look for now in terms of movement? We got the last weekend of the regular season. Then, of course, the conference tournaments. What are you looking for this weekend? Your next update will be Monday. What are you looking for this weekend that'll maybe move some things for you up or down?
Well, I'm definitely very interested in something that I brought up at the beginning of the podcast, San Diego State. I honestly, and I know that people will hear this podcast and probably want to find me and punch me in the face, but San Diego State is playing in the Mountain West tournament this weekend, and if they win it, they'll probably lock up a one seed. That, you know, and you would think, okay, that's how you should do, you know, that's how it should be, everything, yada, yada, yada. But if Gonzaga wins their conference tournament, they're going to lock up the one seed in the West. And if I'm San Diego State, I know you're kind of playing a little bit of, you know, roulette here, thinking, oh, well, what if Gonzaga's probably going to win their conference? If I'm San Diego State, the thought of winning the Mountain West tournament isn't that big of a deal to me, and being a one seed, because if they don't win the Mountain West, they'll probably be the two seed, and then we'll be put into the West in Los Angeles with Gonzaga. That's a pretty good draw for them. Now, of course, they're probably sitting there thinking, we'll win our tournament and maybe something will happen to Gonzaga, and then we'll jump them on the one line, which could possibly happen. But it'll be very interesting to see what happens with San Diego State, if they can somehow get the one in the Western Conference, in the Western region, which would be Gonzaga losing in their tournament, or if they lose a game and then almost kind of get rewarded for it and get to be closer to home as a two seed. So that's definitely something that I'm going to look at when those conference tournaments are done wrapping up. And then, I mean, everything else is just, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see, like, the 2 and 3 lines, because I feel like, and even the 4 line, to be honest with you, the 2, 3, and 4 lines, I feel like, switch so drastically all the time. And, I'm very interested to see who's going to pull, if someone's going to pull away, or who's going to, like, kind of solidify their spot. Like, in the Big East, I feel like Creighton, Seton Hall, and Villanova are all battling to see who can get a 2 seed. Those are just some of the things to be looking out for. And then, you know, it's, let's see how Virginia does. Let's see if Virginia can improve their seeding. They keep jumping up on mine. They were a 7 out west. Now I have them a 7 in the Midwest. They're playing in Greensboro, which would be very nice, I'm sure, for all the UVA fans. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested to see, like, if a win over Louisville, where that could put them maybe at the 6th line.
Yeah, pay attention to conference tournaments next week and who on the bubble wins and maybe solidifies, who on the bubble loses and maybe falls, who on the other side of the bubble wins a couple games, and then you say, wow, recency bias, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of flux here as we're talking. We're only 9 days away from Selection Sunday, and there's a lot of chance for a lot of stuff to move around. So, well, Seth, thank you for your time. Let's get you back on Monday with your latest update, and we'll get things updated here.
All right. Thanks for having me.